with the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man, the leisure man.
Welcome to the Super Bowl edition of the Leisureman Podcast. Sorry, Andrew, I almost blew the doors off you, but I'm so excited.
Yeah, dude, no, it's Super Bowl week. There's nothing but high energy here.
You know, this is the podcast that everyone in the sports media looks forward to every year, the us two chopping it up. We do a thing that they don't do here. By the way, we set the scene. We're at NBC Sports set up right here, Radio Row, down in Miami at the Convention Center. But we do a thing on the Leisureman. Mm-hmm. Unlike a lot of other shows, Andrew, let me take this for a second. Instead of having Saquon Barkley on or Drew Brees or you know, Dan Marino, Aaron Rodgers. We have no guests.
Yeah.
We focus on you, the listener, and the content.
Yeah, I mean, anybody can book A-list celebrities down
except
here.
For
it's
us.
Miami. It's South Beach. They're everywhere.
Right.
But we are like, instead, we offer you two D-list celebrities.
Yeah, D-list.
Coming straight at you.
Like, from where I'm sitting right now, I could see Saquon Barkley. I see Jay Glazer from Fox over there. There's John Clayton. Those are amongst the people that will not be on this show.
Yeah, John Clayton. I don't know if he kind of fit in that triumvirate.
But my point is that we can't even get John.
We could, we could probably, if we're given enough lead time. You know, John's a big, you know, he's a big scene guy down here in Miami. You need to get in the Fontainebleau.
Mr. Miami, John Clayton?
I'm just kidding. By the way, someone asked me, like, are you going to, like, the hot clubs? Are you going to Club LIV? Are you going, it might be Live, I don't even know.
Right.
Are you going to Fontainebleau? Are you going to this and that? I'm like, well, Paulie and I got tacos at like 5:38 yesterday.
Yeah. Basically setting the scene for the Leisureman experience. Again, you'd think Miami would be perfect for us.
Yeah.
We are leisure men of leisure. You know, up early.
Yep.
No breakfast. You know, you got to save it for the rest of the day.
I had a scoop of peanut butter today.
Yeah, I had a spoonful of peanut butter.
Yeah, that's breakfast. High protein.
Then afternoon, we just had Huahua tacos.
That was good.
Really good local taco joint. At night, we've had a little bit of Cuban food.
Yeah, I had a. I was actually without you one meal, and I had a gigantic Cuban sandwich.
Yeah, we went to that place. It's a very, it's like the Havana or something or other. And
I'm done. My stomach's like I can't do any more Cuban food.
Pretty
I
good
had,
though.
Like, four meals.
I like the mustard and the pickles.
It's funny, like we're going. It's a funny trip because we're going for long periods of starvation followed by incredible amounts of overeating. But that's kind of what you do Super Bowl week.
So another thing, for those of you who've never been to Miami before, it's an international city. I could see why this is an attractive tourist destination because it's hopping Sunday through Sunday. There's no downtime. Like Fridays and Saturdays are really lit, as a kid say.
Yeah.
But on a Monday night, you can find lots of places to go. That said, including San Francisco, I think Miami is the most expensive town I've ever been to, including New York. If you go to these high-priced hotels, high-priced beach clubs, it's a lot of bottle service. It's by Tim Kawakami, Contra Costa Times. I bought a drink for a buddy of mine yesterday. He had one glass of bourbon, and it was $32 for one glass.
Wow. Yeah, no, I think New York is like that, too. We just don't go to places that charge like that. Like, I think that there's places like that in New York and L.A., but you have to remember, Paul, we're in South Beach.
Right.
Like, we're in, like, you know, we don't have to be in South Beach. We could be other places in Miami and buy a normal drink.
All right, Leisureman tip. If you were going to take your wife, your girlfriend to Miami, would you blow out the budget on the hotel itself or the dinners and maybe like a boating trip and like lower price hotel, better experiences, food, drink, and boating maybe, or high price hotel and maybe go to the places to eat that are a little one tier off? I don't know if you could do that.
Yeah, I feel like you're sort of like, say, like it's like coming to coupons with Miami. Like, you have to go high end all the way. You have to double
up. Some
people
can't, though.
Well, yeah, but you have to, the whole scene here is like, it's one of those towns where you have to be seen in the right hotel.
Right.
Like, you can't.
But
like,
you could stay at a hotel four blocks inland, dress real nice, and head over to the Delano or the Sagamore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've stayed all over this darn town through the years. You know, I've stayed in like Fort Lauderdale many times. I've stayed, which is actually, that's a way to sort of cut down the cost. Fort Lauderdale is not as crazy.
So
West
you're
Palm,
saying, are you
Boca.
Saying Fort Lauderdale is less hip than South Beach?
Fort Lauderdale is super hip.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. Fort Lauderdale is happening. There's no doubt about it.
Wow.
All of them are. Boca is not, but it's really nice. Boca's where the old people live.
Right.
But yeah, honestly, like I've already said, this is going to sound terrible. So you have your East Coast vacation area. I know that's grown up from the Northeast. Like, you're from Chicago. Like,
yeah.
I don't think Miami was the number one town. Like, everybody came to Miami.
Still, if you live in Chicago, the Midwest.
You might come to the West side of Florida.
It's more Disney.
Yeah, see, that's
you aspire to go to Disney when you're growing up in the Midwest.
No, no, there's a straight pipeline from Philadelphia, New York to Miami. Like, tons of people come down here. So you come down here in the winter on spring breaks or winter breaks, and you know everybody here. So, I mean, it's massive. We're only, like, South Beach is just a slice of it. Honestly, I would rather do, if I had a family, Disney and stuff.
Right.
But if... You bring up a great point. If you're like a single, like a 20-something, I don't know if this is my scene. Because you have to spend so much money, and you're never going to make a dent on anything here because there's celebrities everywhere.
Oh, I don't know about that. Yeah. I mean, you know, if I were a single guy coming to Miami, I think you could have a really good time. If you brought a couple bros, it's not like a frat party town. It's not like a bachelor party town.
Yeah, it's not Daytona Beach. Yeah.
All right, let's get to some football. This week has been pretty sans news. Not a lot of news coming from either team. I think that's obviously because of the Kobe Bryant story taking over this week, but I think it's also because this is a really simple, great NFL matchup that it's exactly what you want, and people are very satisfied and expect a really good, clean game, and there's no bulletin board so far.
No, there hasn't been one quote. You know, I was thinking about it, but did we talk about the Rams and the Patriots last year?
We always talk about the Patriots.
Have we really talked about a Super Bowl matchup in 20 years? There's so much football coverage throughout the season. We beat the football to death.
Right.
Nobody cares by Super Bowl week, especially with the 2 week in between.
And also, it's almost like if you're a fan of any team besides the two that are left, the football season is over for you.
Right. Right, right. You're already looking ahead. You're looking draft and everything.
When we on the Dan Patrick Show, when we discuss the offseason with quarterbacks, we get more buzz and more response from our listeners than we do when we talk about the Super Bowl game itself.
Yeah, everyone. You're right. I don't think there's any room to care. By the way, Anthony, the tech engineer, seems to be either opening a bomb over here or something, setting up for a big guest. What's going on?
I think
here?
He's shutting down the whole operation mid-show.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought we were doing all right.
Yeah, you're right, though. The Chiefs and the Niners, there's no bulletin board. No one said anything really good. But I want to get into the betting aspect of it. Because that's another part. Like, the original line was 0.5, and it's flirted with that the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been a ton of movement, a ton of intrigue with the betting line. It feels like they kind of nailed it, right?
Yeah, you got to get creative with the betting. I like betting, and I haven't bet myself in a long time, but I follow it. I discuss it with you, with other people. And I have a Super Bowl bet in my mind that I'm going to put forth. I actually called a guy today to get down on it. And no, in all seriousness, guy who can bet for me. And he's like a friend of the family who bets. So I said, can you get these odds for me?
Yeah.
So I actually think that the Chiefs will probably win this game if I were picking head to head. But that's kind of a boring bet. You put $50 down, you win $50. My bet is a parlay of the San Francisco 49ers to win outright and running back Raheem Mostert to be the MVP. And again, this is not the most original take of all time, but if they get a big lead early or a nice lead early as the Chiefs have given up, Mostert's going to get the ball a ton. He's probably going to get the ball a ton even if they're down, but and if he has 112 yards and two touchdowns, and Jimmy Garoppolo is 11 for 17 with a touchdown, Mostert's might be a better story and may get it. Or, you know, I know Joey Bosa could get it. Or I'm sorry, Nick Bosa could get it, or one of the defensive backs with a huge play. But I think it's a reliable play with Mostert. He was 7-1 a week ago. He's 5-1 now for MVP, 5.5-1. That's going to drop even more because money's coming in on him. If you put today a parlay of Raheem Mostert and the 49ers to win the Super Bowl, you can get it at 12-1 odds. So you put 100, you win $1,200.
So is that the money line or with the spread?
Money line.
Okay. So you might as well, because I'd ignore that point.
It's about the same. So that's a nice play. You know, you can go into Super Bowl Sunday with $100 as your total loss, which I don't think that's going to kill anybody. You know,
no, I like that a lot.
$50.
What's Jimmy G? Do you know?
He's a tick off Mahomes. I think if you put $100 on Jimmy G to win MVP, you would win $225. I mean, that's a nice play, like, too.
Not really.
There's not much upside to it.
I like what you're saying. I'm like, there's no way Jimmy G is going to win MVP of this game. Dude threw 8 balls in his last game.
If you had to parlay a bet with a MVP otherwise and a team, where would you go?
Well, I was wondering, you know, when you were talking about that Raheem Mostert, who's the Chiefs version? Tariq Hill? Because he can go off. Kelsey, we've seen him go off recently.
You could see Kelsey getting 10 catches.
Yeah. You could see a Tariq Hill game. If they don't double-team him, he's going to destroy you. So you have a choice. Basically, we saw this in the playoffs. You're going to double-team Tariq Hill, or you're going to double-team Kelsey.
Right.
Now, who was it? The Texans double-teamed Tariq Hill.
Right. And Kelsey
just murdered them.
I think he had 7 catches in the first half.
Yeah. He had like 80% of the targets. So Kelsey might be a nice, fun play there.
Mm-hmm.
Kittle has not been doing it lately. I like, I mean, he's such a great character. I don't, why do I not see a 140-yard game from George Kittle?
I'd have to check on the stats with Kittle because I don't know if he's targeted enough. It seems more like when he gets the ball, the plays he makes are very enticing.
Yeah, he makes big plays.
Yeah, he makes physical plays, and he's very exciting to watch, but I don't know if he's a 100-ball catches-a-year guy.
Yeah.
And, of course, by saying this, we almost guarantee these wins.
Well, I saw him. I know this because Case Keenum and the Broncos were playing once. He had 200 yards in the first half, set an all-time NFL record for a tight end.
Yeah.
So if he goes berserk, I kind of like, I'm feeling Tyreek Hill because I honestly think he's the best non-quarterback in this game. I think he is the best player on both teams. Does that sound like
you've been a fan of his for a while because
not a person, but as a player.
Oh, of course not. Yeah. We don't care about any of these guys
as a
person.
When you watch him, he's so different than the other guys. Like he is just like in a league full of incredible athletes, it feels like he's Usain Bolt compared to the rest of the field.
It felt like last year was a bigger year for him. This year he's been nicked up.
Definitely.
He seems to come out of games pretty regularly with a bang up, a knee that just gets bumped into, and he leaves for four or five plays.
Yeah, I wonder how it'll be with Sherman and him, if they'll match up at all. Sherman, obviously, later part of his career, he can't single cover him. No way.
I was watching some coverage of Richard Sherman, and they were even saying, you know, all the stuff they say about him is true. He's not fast. He's not small. He's not a small guy. I've met him before, but he's not 6'2 and a half, and he's not jump out of the gym. But how he gets his interceptions is by playing the quarterback and reading the quarterback and trying to read the passer, not the guy. He loses receivers sometimes. But if you see his interceptions, because he's looking to where the quarterback's going, and he goes to the spot and he tries to beat you to the spot with his intellect and his preparation.
Right. I'm pointing at my head now, which indicates he's
a heady player.
He knows angles and all that. Like all those veteran guys, like Earl Thomas baits guys at interceptions all the time. You know, who is an older player? Like Ed Reed. We always talk about him. Ed, was there ever a more brilliant player, Ed Reed? I'm sure Polamalu was the same way, where he just knew what to do. I don't think Troy Polamalu was very fast, and he just knew where to go.
You know, Polamalu, I don't know about speed, but it seemed like he got to the play in a hurry.
Yeah, that's
like
true.
He ran to the ball carrier 100 miles an hour for him. And just unloaded.
Well, as an example, I never saw him play live, and you didn't either, but Dick Butkus was not fast, but they say nobody got side to side on the field faster.
Right. Like
I don't know how he did it.
Like Urlacher.
Urlacher, too. Yeah.
Do you think Polamalu's hair made him look faster than he is? Because it was flowing out of the back.
That could be.
It's my Polamalu theory.
He was... Polamalu, he played, it's a different era too. He could murder people. He could just blow people up left to right. My guy Brian Dawkins in Philly, dude, he could cover, but he could also just take you out.
You and I could talk local safeties for hours.
Oh my God. Well, they're Hall of Famers. They're not local, I think.
Oh, but Brian Dawkins is not a household name for NFL fans. I know it hurts.
Gold jacket, I mean.
I know. He deserves it.
There's 10 safeties in the history of the game.
When I was a little kid growing up in Chicago liking Bears football, they had these two safeties, Doug Plank and Gary Fensick. Fensick, you may know, he was on the 85 Bears and was a nice player. Went to Yale. Doug Plank was this guy. I don't know where into college, maybe UCLA. He only played about 7 years with the Bears. He was a cheap shotter.
Which one was 46?
46 was Plank.
Plank was 46, so that's a 46 defense.
Yeah, and he used to.
So did he go to USC with Fisher?
Maybe that's it. I don't know. I thought he was a West Coast guy.
And how did Dave Duerson work in there? He was like a rookie on the 85, right? Or did he come right after that?
Duerson. Oh, boy. I would say the 83 draft was Duerson.
Yeah, I think Duerson might have taken Plank's job at some point.
Yeah, because Plank had back injuries and neck injuries because he blew himself up while blowing other people up.
Yeah.
But
that's all-time defense. Oh.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, but I'm as big of an Ed Reed fan as you're going to find. Yeah. If I could start my defense with a player that was not a defensive end, all-time, want to do this?
Yeah.
You could start your defense.
No, wait. So not Lawrence Taylor or J.J. Watt, you're saying.
Okay, how about this? We each get one linebacker of any type, one defensive lineman of any type, one safety of any type, one defensive back of any type, I should say. And it's not a draft. You could pick your three. I'll pick my three. I want to go first.
Wait, so you get a linebacker but not a pass-rushing linebacker?
Not Lawrence Taylor would count as your defensive end.
Okay, so we're getting a linebacker. What are the positions again?
Linebacker, defensive line, and defensive back.
So we could just get Reggie White as a pass. We could get a pass rusher. Okay, so, all right, you go first or I'm going first?
I'll go first.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm going to go defensive back. I'm going to go Ed Reed as my safety. I love the fact that he could play everything. You never have to leave the field. Pretty good cover guy. Great intercepting guy. Can hit well. Seemed to be very smart on the football field.
Yeah.
almost no weaknesses. I'm going to go Ed Reed.
Perfect choice. I mean, it's an unbeatable choice. You know, I love Ray Lewis, too, on that defense, but Reed's number one. Should I go to safety? Or are you going to go all three?
Okay. All right, it's defensive back. It could be corner.
Defensive back. So I'm going to go with someone I saw, Darrell Revis, because he's the best coverage guy I've ever seen. I've never seen, when the Jets were good, those two championship years, he was the key. Because he took out the number one receiver in a way that nobody ever has. So you had 10 guys to beat up the rest of the
to the point where their number one receiver became a decoy in some games.
Yeah, like even Moss couldn't do that much. Sometimes Moss got him. But he's the best. In a era where the most important position is pass rusher, the second most important is cover corner, he was by so far and away the best I've ever seen. In fact, there was a year where I thought he should be MVP, so I'm going to Revis.
I'll go linebacker next, and I'm going to go Brian Urlacher of the Bears. I think he's a touch underrated. Great cover guy, great tackler, all across the field, could run. A little bit of injuries at the end of his year cooled him, under his career, cooled him off. But his first seven seasons, I thought he was, it was like Ray Lewis without the histrionics.
Yeah.
Without the image. But I think on the field, his
play. Let me ask you a real question, though. Was he a bit of a system player in the sense that he was perfect for that role in Lovie Smith's,
the
whatever
two
that
big, they had
Tampa
two big defensive linemen, and they protected him, and he got to.
Yeah, yeah. So, but like he couldn't have done that in every. He couldn't have been who he was in every other defense. He said that before.
I know what you're saying, but I loved his speed. I loved his intensity. There are probably other linebackers that a lot of people would take ahead of him.
But
he can cover people too. I want someone I don't have to take off the field.
But I mean, come on. I mean, Singletary was better than Urlacher. Singletary,
not to me. I mean, Singletary was more intense and a focal point of the town than Urlacher. But I think Urlacher was a better player, especially pass coverage.
Okay, I'm going to go an inside linebacker because.
I know you're anti-inside linebacker.
Yeah, I once saw this quote, or actually, no, Jerry Angelo, I did this little thing, and he's like, he goes, you look at the history of the NFL, every great defense had one position that was solid. And I'm like, oh, what was it? It was like outside linebackers. No, like every great defense ever has an unbelievable middle linebacker. And he said, he went Urlacher, Ray Lewis, Mike Singletary, Dick Butkus. I don't know. He went through the list. He's like, almost every Super Bowl champion has a good middle linebacker. So with that in mind, I'm going to go Ray Lewis, who I thought was the best that I've seen.
That's
in the time.
Fair.
And the other thing was Ray Lewis, every quarterback, he's like, the dude knew the plays. It was bizarre. Like you could hear on NFL films, the quarterback would say something, and Lewis, they're going to run right into that hole. And then they would run right into the hole. I don't know how he did it. And like he's just attacking the machine intensity. And do you remember how good he was early, too?
Around
the time they won the Super Bowl.
And he is a good coverage guy.
Oh, I didn't even know that. Actually.
I thought he was very good. He got a lot of interceptions.
He was just him and Ed Reed kind of combined, but their defense was dominant for 10 years. So I'll go there. All right, what's the next position?
Defensive lineman. I'm trying to go off the board here a little bit, but there's no reason to. I think I'm going to go Bruce Smith, the Buffalo Bills. You can't say underrated because he's considered one of the best four linemen of all time, probably defensive lineman. But I remember watching him, and I used to think it was funny that the defensive guys trying to block him. And they would have two guys, and he would do run, pass. He'd do everything. He seemed flawless. He was not a very talkative guy. He was not as famous as other players, as Reggie White. He didn't do as many interviews. He wasn't. Jim Kelly got more of the publicity. Thurman Thomas, Andre Reed got a lot more publicity than him. Even guys like, you know, those other players on their defense, Talley, got more camera time. Because Bruce was not a talker in his career. So I think that hurts him maybe a little bit in NFL persona. But I don't have anything to worry about with half my defensive line.
Yeah. I'm going to move up Lawrence Taylor to call him a defensive
end. Fine.
Yeah, because obviously I got to see Reggie, and he was the best. But Lawrence Taylor was like kind of the OG, the original here. And, you know, whenever I see Ron Jaworski, my last image of Ron Jaworski will be like this. Because he just got hit in the back by Lawrence Taylor. So I'm going to LT.
All right. That was fun. Little draft. It's kind of like what the guys, Florio and the blonde guy do.
Yeah, yeah. Super Bowl storyline draft. Like backup quarterback draft.
Right. Defensive back running linebacker, defensive lineman draft.
Medium hyped stories draft. Like they'll totally do anything.
Oh, Sims loves that stuff. All right. Last thing, we get serious here for a minute. Everyone knows about Kobe Bryant passing away the other day. Now, I want to get to this a little bit because we didn't talk to it much on the Dan Patrick Show. You grew up in Lower Merion, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Now, before Kobe Bryant came along, nobody around the country, including myself, had ever heard of a town called Lower Merion, Pennsylvania.
Probably not.
Definitely not.
Well, I mean,
I know, I'm sure it was a nice place to grow up.
Al Haig went there.
Super. I can guarantee you 99.9% of us had never heard of the town. It's like, I'm sure it's a very nice suburb of Philadelphia. Where I grew up, no one ever heard of either. But that town is so branded.
You grew up, where did you grow up?
Chicago Heights area, south side
of
Chicago.
Yeah, but you've heard of Chicago. You just had
But I'm not in Chicago. I wasn't in Chicago. I'm complimenting your town.
Wait, Chicago Heights is not in the city line?
No, it's a suburb.
Oh,
I was born in the area called.
It says Chicago. That's why I always thought that. Actually, I did not know that. I thought you were in the city proper.
I was born.
Extend it out.
I was born in a neighborhood called Roseland, which was city proper.
Yeah, anyway.
So my point is, though, that when after Kobe Bryant got famous, I can remember the day I met you and we started talking, and we started getting to know each other, I said, so where you go to? You told us where you went to college, and you said, oh, I'm from Lower Marion. And you didn't even have to get to Pennsylvania. I'm like, oh, Kobe. Did you go to Kobe with high school?
Yeah.
You're like, I sure did. My brother played with him. I'm like, I mean, that's your town's image forever.
Yeah. And the thing about Kobe is since he didn't go to a college for his whole career, he was introduced as Kobe Bryant from Lower Marion High School.
Right.
Which, I don't know. Do they do that with LeBron? I guess LeBron is introduced from his high school. I don't know why.
Akron's a good-sized town. Lower Marion's a suburb of a big town.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So when you grew up there, Kobe Bryant was what, 6 years younger than you about? Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
How much do you remember about him arriving, playing basketball there? Your brother played with him for a couple of years. What do you remember early, late, before he got famous?
Well, he was never not famous and locally because his dad, Joe Jellybean Bryant, was a sixth man on like the NBA Finals teams.
Okay.
So Joe Bryant, even before Kobe played at Lower Marion, was like, I don't know if you ever heard much about him. He's like one of those sports dads.
Okay.
He just comes in and he's a hurricane. Shakes everyone's hands. He's like, I'm here. I'm bringing my boy. We're just going to dominate people. So he had a hype man in advance. So that's why Kobe got so famous so fast at Lower Marion, because Joe Bryant pushed him.
Was he a starter on the varsity as a freshman at Lower Marion?
Yeah. He was a leading scorer as a freshman. So everyone knew he was already rumored to be a pro in eighth grade.
Right.
I think he was selling out the Palestra by his junior year.
So explain the Palestra.
Palestra is like a 14,000-seat arena in the city.
As a junior in high school.
A junior. Senior year, he had to play in big places. So the LM gym didn't really hold enough. For freshman year, they were bad. I think they were like, when he was a freshman, and he was good. He was a leading scorer. My brother was on that team, and they were like a 500 team. So no one knew that they were going to be that team. But they knew who he was because his dad, it was just his dad. He was a celebrity.
So in your region of the area, your little radius of that area, by the time he's 15, he's a household name?
Household name, absolutely.
Wow.
Kobe Bryant, yeah, he was at, the NBA, he practiced with the Sixers, and somehow we all knew that.
Right. But nobody, because it didn't really get busy with him until his senior year when they started putting like ESPN the magazine.
He make ESPN the magazine?
I don't remember. I don't think he made the cover, but they started covering him with the possibility of him going pro right out of high school.
Yeah. Locally, he already had so much. He was an incredible hype machine around him. Like, I just saw a guy who's from Philadelphia Press. He's the same way. Like, Kobe's been part of our lives for a long time.
It is weird, though. He didn't go, like, top six or seven in the NFL NBA draft. He was, Tyson Chandler went second or third. Eddie Curry, but this is before that.
This whole story about Kobe going 13 and Jerry West, like, scouting him. I'm sorry. Like, that is not how we remember it at all.
Right.
Kobe was one of the top five players in the draft. No one had any doubt. And he, Jellybean Bryant and his Kobe's agent, I think it was Arntell, said, you can draft Kobe all you want. He ain't coming anywhere but L.A. or New York. And he was adamant about that.
Do you believe that that's the real story and the nicer, friendlier story is that Jerry West participated in it and got it done, but maybe even Jerry West didn't know that Arntell was saying, he can go to college.
No. Well, you know what we should do? We should go back to that draft. I swear, it was an open. It was a lot like Eli and Phillip Rivers. Mm-hmm. Like, it was like, there's no way you draft him. There's 7, 8, 9, like Sacramento's of the world. He said, I'm not playing there. I'm going to go to college. I'm going to go to Duke.
Going back to high school, your younger brother played on the same high school team for a couple years, correct, Kobe?
Well, actually, 1 year.
1 year. Do you remember hearing much from your brother about how he was as a person, as a teammate off the court?
Yeah, well, I went to a lot of my brother's games. I was in Philly. Yeah, he was awesome. He was so humble as a kid. He was the most polite guy. And he loved me because I would go to the games. He loved my brother, so he'd be very, very gracious.
So you met him a bunch of times?
A bunch of times at the games. Yeah, so I saw my brother. He was super nice. So I honestly was surprised when he got cocky later. That was a transformation. He did get cocky. There's no way, even he would admit that.
But do you think he was cocky by design and not by inheriting fame? More so like, look, if I'm going to be the best in the world, I may have to put on a persona.
Oh, exactly.
Like an assassin, like Michael Jordan, because I think he modeled his career after Jordan. And Jordan had a reputation for not taking anything from anybody and not really being Mr. Friendly.
Yep.
And I wonder if Kobe said, this is a necessity to be the baddest man on the planet, to be a little bit of a badass.
You nailed it on the head. I think it was a competitive move by him. Mm-hmm. He's like, I have to project that I'm the best. I don't really think that's who he was behind the scenes. That's right. And I think a different side of him came out afterwards. This, of course, speculation. He might laugh at us and say, yeah, I was the best. But I think you're right. I think he, you know, remember he stuck out his tongue like Mike.
Right. His voice sounded like him.
He wanted to mentally be like Michael because Michael was winning titles, and that's all he wanted to do.
And it does make sense because if you look at Kobe Bryant over the past 3.5 years after he retired, he's much more of a chill guy, do more interviews, talked to more players, and was more friendly. And that's where I never really thought of it until this week after he passed away. It's like, I wonder if that was a facade of, by necessity, to intimidate and control people and make people intimidated by you as with your presence before you even get to the court.
Yeah, it was a mask for everything he did. If you look at his career, everything he did was to get a competitive edge. There wasn't a single thing he did. So you're right. I think he molded his personality to win. I think in the later years, like, you saw a different side of him. And he's also, too, I think that personality, the fun personality that we saw, I think that was always there. But I think he suppressed it. You know, have you ever heard stories he wouldn't really practice with other guys?
Yeah.
He didn't want them to see his moves in the offseason. Yeah, was Mike like that? I feel like he had his boys.
It's hard to know because those stories didn't get out. But Michael Jordan, of course, had a reputation for being very tough on teammates. Made a mistake, you could be out. He had his own dressing room, all that kind of stuff.
But he had, like, best friends, like players that...
Charles Oakley.
Okay.
He was tight with Oakley, and he was very mad when Oakley got traded. The one thing, it seems like Jordan has kept that persona after he retired.
Yeah.
And still, like, has to challenge everybody and be offensive and defensive at the same time. And Kobe said, hey, man, it's time to chill. I'm a family man now.
Yep.
And,
you know, by the way, let me just say that makes this week more heartbreaking because we really sort of fall in love with Kobe post-playing career.
Right.
With the movie, just the admiration for how he embraced his daughter's basketball game. Like, I think we were just like, it was like the beginning of a love affair with post-basketball Kobe. And that made it way harder. It would have been hard anyway, but that made it way harder.
I think you're 100% right. I think if this exact incident happened 3 years ago, we wouldn't know anything more than the basketball Kobe image.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now we feel like we know him as a person a little bit, and it's, man, how tough was it for you, by the way, on Sunday? Because you're a father.
Well, I'm careful with the tough for me because I'm just some guy sitting in a hotel room upset by the death of a famous person I didn't know.
Right.
So, but it's affecting me in the fact that, I'm reading more about Kobe Bryant and the things he did and how he did things, and I always wondered why he didn't get into coaching or general managing or owning a team. And I realized it had nothing more than to spend more time at home. Mm. And Dan Patrick, we had him on 2 years ago, and Dan goes, you ever think about coaching? He goes, I do coach, Dan, every day. I coach my daughter's team.
Yeah, that's...
And I was like, God dang, it didn't make sense at the time. I was like, why aren't you helping out with the Lakers? You could get the GM job in 10 seconds. You're Kobe Bryant. But in his mind, he's like, "That's I've done that. I gave my time. I gave at the office.
I know. It's totally tough. That interview we played on the Dan Patrick Show, I had trouble listening to that. That was really, it was really like, because how long until he talked about his daughter in there?
First minute. Dan asked him, what time do you get up in the morning? He goes, oh, I'm up by 3:45 or 4. I start working out. I hit the weights. He goes, you know, it's funny. He goes, my middle daughter is now getting up sometimes and working out with me.
Yeah.
And Dan goes, oh, yeah? And Dan didn't even, he goes, yeah, Gianna, She's watch out, man. She's coming.
I know.
She's a little me.
And you see the highlights. She has those same facial expressions.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to get you on the court. Oh, man.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's terrible what happened, but I really think, and I'm not being melodramatic, I think it's going to be a lot of, and I don't know if it's middle-aged people, it's going to affect more than younger people. I think middle-aged people will maybe check themselves. And maybe in 2 weeks from now, they go back to business as usual.
They probably will.
But yeah. I can tell you for myself, I'm kind of checking myself and saying, okay, am I doing everything I can to be present?
For my daughter.
For my daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
Plural.
And
because, my dad died at 39.
Yeah.
And I was 11. And that's pretty close to Kobe's daughter's age and Kobe's age. And, boy, my dad seemed real, real young at the time. 39 seems like a middle-aged man. 41 seems like a middle-aged man. That's really, really young.
Oh, it's very young. It's a great point. Put away the phone when you're with your kids. Leisureman tip.
But. You're not kidding.
Oh, by the way, I want to get a bet in before we end the Super Bowl conference.
You want a Leisureman Super Bowl bet? Friendly bet?
Yeah, yeah. No. I want to get, you love Mostert parlayed with the money line for the Niners. I just love the over. I think I find it very hard to believe that that the Chiefs aren't going to rack up some points. I think the Niners can score too. I saw 54.5 I saw the other day. I really, really like the over. And remember that, I don't want to say who he was. He's a team employee. He had red hair. That's all I would say. He's like, he has some control over it. He's like, whatever you do, look at that over hard.
See,
I won't say which team.
This is begging me to bet the under because so many people are putting their cash on the over.
First of all, why do you want to bet the under? Don't you like fun? Why,
no.
You're
going to
be rooting for a bad Super Bowl?
I like money more than fun.
All right.
I'll take the under.
All right. And yeah, we could do a bet. I'll take the Chiefs. You take the Niners.
Sounds fun. Hey, that's
for
the Leisureman Podcast live from Miami. Yeah, thanks to all the guests that didn't appear on the show. And
yeah.
We'll be back next week on the Leisureman on NBC Sports Radio.